RunSmith Enterprises presents episode 12 of Topics in Endurance Sports. I'm your host, Tim. Today is Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. Happy holidays to everyone. I would first like to note that this is not a Dog Days of Advent episode. For you people only listening to the Dog Days of Advent episodes, this is a full-length, regular Topics in Endurance Sports episode. It will be over an hour long, so you might want to just completely skip it at this point. The rest of you, feel free to keep listening. You can find out more about me at runsmith.net. Email, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'll give you those. Twitter is at runsmithe. Instagram, Tim C. Smith, 1961. That'll give you some idea of when I was born. Email, chemsmith1@gmail.com. Chemsmith starts like the word chemistry, C-H-E-M, Smith 1, the number 1, chemsmith1@gmail.com. I would really, really, really love to hear from people. Send me an email. Tell me who you are, where you live, what you do, what type of running you do, what your job is, everything. I really want to get to know people who are listening. And I know I'm getting a number of downloads every week, and I only know a handful of people who actually listen. So could the rest of you just shoot me an email at chemsmith1@gmail.com? Tell me who you are, and also things like what you think of the show, what else you'd like to hear that I might be able to add into it. Anything you like, anything about the quality of the show, whatever interests you. But I would really like to hear from the people who are listening. I have one main topic for today's show, and that is a race I did a while back called the general name of all the races. There are a number of races, is Run Woodstock. I did this back on September 8th. So that is October, November, December, over 3 months ago. So I'm still behind on this. If I'm really lucky, I'll get a podcast out in the next couple of weeks, and I'll be at least caught up with all my races, all my major races anyway. I don't do podcasts on little 5Ks or anything like that I do, or local shorter races. I generally don't cover those, but the major races I try to cover because not only are they interesting, and it's kind of a diary for myself, I admit. Part of this is just so maybe I can go back in 30 years and listen to these things. But also, these are the big races that people might be interested in doing, and my goal is to try to give you some overview of the race. So again, I'm way behind. I apologize for that, but for someone thinking of doing it in the future, that doesn't really make any difference. So let's get into it. Run Woodstock. This is 3 days of events at Hell Creek Ranch and Campground in Pinckney, Michigan. It's called the Pinckney Recreation Area, P-I-N-C-K-N-E-Y, Pinckney Recreation Area in Pinckney, Michigan. This is the southern half of Michigan, not too far from Ann Arbor. And they have a ton of races. This goes on for 3 days. So listen up to all this. Pay attention to all this, all these races going on. And all the races have funny names. So the 100-mile race, which is the one I did, it's called the Hallucination 100, and you're going to catch the theme on this pretty quickly, especially when the name of the whole thing is Run Woodstock. So I did the Hallucination 100-mile race. It's a six-loop race, you marked by pink ribbons. Each loop is 16.7 miles, and it starts at 4 p.m. on Friday, which is rather unique, Friday at 4 p.m. It's mostly single track, there's some horse track, and there's some crushed gravel and some road. So 16.7-mile loop six times. Also starting at 4 p.m. on Friday is the Happening 100K. So they only do four laps of the same course. Saturday at 6 a.m. was the three-lap Peace, Love, and 50-mile. Peace, Love, and 50-mile. They do three laps. Starts at 6 a.m., pretty early start. And there's the two-lap Freak 50K, starts at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. So that's four races already. At 7:30 a.m. on Saturday morning is the Blue Ribboned course, a shorter course, a half marathon course. and there is a one loop. I'm sorry, a two loop marathon and a one loop half marathon. So at 7:30 a.m., you can do a half marathon or a marathon. Also, on Friday night, there were two different 5K races on Friday night, including the Far Out 5K run and the Funky Bus 50K. And the Far Out 5K has a natural component to it. Yes, that means you can run naked. I think you take off with your clothes on, and then there's a spot you can take all your clothes off, every single stitch if you want. I think I'd at least keep running shoes on, and then you must run to some back to that spot, put your clothes on before you come back to the campground. That's not all. Saturday evening is also the... I can't even keep track of all of these. Also, Saturday morning is a Flower Power 5 Mile. That was another one on Saturday morning. And Saturday night, there's the Feeling Groovy 5K and 10K. And one or both of these also has a natural component, I think. Sunday morning, there's one more, another Free Love 5 Mile. So as you can see, I'm having troubles even listing all of the races going on. Tons of races. And what's cool about that, obviously, if you go with someone who's doing one of the bigger races, the 100-mile, 100K, 50-mile, 50K, and you're not a huge runner yourself, you do shorter races, you've got some of these other ones to choose from while you're kind of hanging around. So I'm sure there are people who did the 5K Friday night and did a 5-mile Saturday morning and then a 10K Saturday night, all types of stuff like that. And I think some of these other races may not even have a fee with them, or if you're in one race, you know, the other one is free or something like that. You have to look. The website can be complicated because of all these things to kind of go through and figure everything out. Not so bad if you're just doing one race like I am. But there are other things going on too. There's hikes they have, like Saturday at noon or something. I don't really remember the time. They did a hike. There was yoga sessions. There's everything going on. There are bands playing all the time. Friday night, there were bands. I think Saturday at some point, bands began and everything else. Just, it's crazy. Total hippie vibe, hippie themed, and it was really, really neat with all of this stuff. So, what happened with us? We got our hotel Thursday night, even though it wasn't a long drive, but just a long enough drive. I didn't want to drive up Friday morning. It's like 4 or 5 hours. And I kind of wanted to, you know, just sleep closer. And so we got a hotel like a half hour away or something. And that way we could get up pretty late Friday to get as much sleep as possible, drive up there and park and get there by like noon, because I was going to race at 4 p.m. So we parked, you park right across the street from where it starts, and then you haul everything over. You could actually get camp spots right on the campground. The course goes right through the campground. You could get campsites there, and some people did and just slept overnight in a tent, although it was rather chilly. Some people did that, but we got a hotel and drove and just parked right across the street and hauled everything over. So we actually hauled a tent over. The idea is I would put my stuff in the tent, or if my wife, who was with me, wanted to hang out in the tent, she could hang out in the tent at times. Overall, the temperatures are going to be wonderful. They're going to be just warm during the day. I don't really recall the exact temperatures, but I know I wasn't hot, and I know it was pretty sunny. So maybe it was 70s, 80s. It was pretty nice, I think. At night, it was cold, but cold as in like the 40s, which is really quite perfect, actually. I think that's about what it was. So we got checked in like at noon or one, and got a ton of stuff. And I don't have it right in front of me, so hold on one second. I'm going to go grab it. Don't leave.
Here I come.
Okay. Sorry about that. Real professional, right? All right. So, a ton of stuff that we got. It's amazing. So, we got these little funny little plastic sunglasses. They're pretty funny, and they say Hallucination 100 Mile on them.
What else?
Of course, I got a bib that looks kind of cool. It's a neat-looking bib. I'll put pictures of all these things up. Got a bumper sticker, a bib and a bumper sticker. You know, the 100 says 100 miles on it. Some of these things I might have gotten at the finish, and I don't quite remember exactly what I got when. Got a grocery bag that says Run Woodstock on it. Everything's got flowers on it, very hippie-ish looking. I got a shirt, just a regular black. Oh, I love these shirts. It's got a hoodie. It's just a regular long sleeve shirt, but it's got a black hoodie on it, and it says Hallucination 100 Mile, 100 blah 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 Run Woodstock. It's got a bunch of flowers on it, very hippie-ish looking. And then when you finished, so there's a spoiler for you. I did finish. Actually, again, I don't know when I got this. We got a tech T-shirt as well that says Run Woodstock with a whole bunch of flowers. And I got a medal when I finished, so I'm kind of going to the end here. I got a cool medal that's a peace symbol. And, oh, I got one more thing. It was a hat. Where's my hat? I'll be right back again. The professionalism does not end. Okay, I got a cool hat. See if the people who are watching can see the hat. Oh, yeah, there it is. Got a hat. Got a cool hat. Got all types of buttons, too. Little buttons you can get. They just had them sitting around. Grabbed a bunch of buttons. So got my hat. Well, I can't keep my hat on because then I don't have my... I can keep my hat on. I don't need to listen to myself with the headphones. So I got this cool... it's a cowboy hat. A straw cowboy hat. I got that at the finish. The cowboy hat at the finish. So some of these things, obviously the metal... The cowboy hat. I don't know what else we got at the finish. Maybe everything else we got before the race. Okay? So you got a ton of stuff. If you like gathering things up, this is a good race to go to. All right. So sorry about the unprofessionalism there. Anyway, before the race, there's all types of people milling around, of course, because the races are about to start, or people just hanging out. And I found a friend of mine named Brian, one of my coaching clients. I found him and his girlfriend and said hi to them. And he's from Michigan, so I said hi to them and got a picture with Brian and his girlfriend. And then at 3:50, they did the national anthem. So the national anthem has traditionally been sung by a lady named Lemon James. Lemon, like lemon lime. Lemon James. And she did a Jimi Hendrix-style national anthem, which is pretty darn cool. And from what I know, she also will sometimes... run the shorter races, like the 5Ks or something. And I think she also did a national anthem at like 6 in the morning as well. So I guess she's there the whole time hanging out. So 3:50 of the national anthem, and at 4 o'clock, we took off, started running. So there were about 150 people that were doing the 100-mile or the 100K, about 150 people. And we did a loop. First, you start by doing a loop around the campgrounds themselves, and then you head onto the trail, so that helps you kind of spread out a little bit. So the course itself is kind of, imagine a figure eight. It's a horribly lopsided figure eight. It's not a pretty figure eight, but you can think of it like a figure eight. And imagine you start at the very bottom of the number eight, okay? Figure eight, you start at the very bottom. So then you run around to the intersection, all right? And there's an aid station there called the Gracie Aid Station. If I have it right, I hope I do, right before you get to that aid station, there's a long gravel road, very flat, very nice to run on. It's like a mile long or longer to right before you get to that aid station. You actually run down the gravel road, then you run on the trails for a little bit, then I think you get to the aid station. I hope I have this right. So it was always very, very nice to come to that gravel road because you could just relax, don't have to pick your feet up so much. Because you're not on the trails and just kind of cruise down that road is a good spot to make up time. So you do half of the figure eight up to the intersection to the Gracie Aid Station, then continue on to the top of the eight, and that was Richie's Haven Aid Station. All right, and that was halfway through the loop, so it was about 8.3 miles. Because remember, the whole loop is about 16.7. You could have a drop bag here, so I did have a drop bag there. So it was very nice. Every 8.3 miles, roughly, you got to see your drop bag or the start finish. Then you continued around the 8. Now you're at the top. You continue around back to Gracie's aid station. So you would see Gracie's aid station twice every time, and then continue finishing the 8 back to the start finish. Get it? So that's how the course was. So about every 4 miles or a little over 4 miles, you'd have an aid station. So it was really nice as far as that goes. Also, after Gracie's aid station, at some point between there and Richie's Haven, you ran on road for a while. It seemed like quite a while, like a mile. And you ran on part of that again coming back to Gracie's aid station. So I'm not good at judging these things, but maybe between the gravel and the road, you might have run on like 4 miles or more of the whole loop. So out of 16.7 miles, maybe 4 or 5 miles was either road or gravel. Very easy running when you're on those. The road did have some ups and downs to it, but still, again, you don't have to pick your feet up so much, so it made it very nice. The trails themselves, nobody would call these trails hilly, but that's not to say they weren't little tiny hills, sometimes sharp, sometimes not so sharp. And yes, there was rocks and roots and parts of it, but nobody would really call this a technical trail as well. A lot of it was pretty darn smooth, but just not so smooth you could be completely clueless to it, and you did have to pick your feet up or you're going to trip eventually. And some parts were kind of rocky. There were also some sandy parts, not deep sand, maybe like an inch of sand, but sand. So I did wear gaiters. I think someone warned me to wear them or something. I did wear those, which was probably helpful to keep from getting sand into my shoes. So that is a general makeup of a course. Pretty easy course. The day was, the conditions were absolutely perfect. And I almost felt guilty about how good the conditions are. Because normally you want there to be, you almost kind of want there to be some adverse conditions so you can have some excuse for how you did. Maybe not an excuse, but to have a story behind it. Oh, I ran in the rain and the mud and the snow and all this. There was nothing like that. The course was 100% dry. The temperatures were perfect. There was nothing to complain about. There weren't even mosquitoes or anything. I mean, there was absolutely nothing. And what that means is you can't even find an excuse to quit. Not that I find them anyway normally, but, you know, it was so perfect. It was almost too perfect of a day. So it was kind of funny. But, hey, you got to have those once in a while, right? Everybody deserves a perfect day sometimes. I ran in shoes, the Hoka Challenger ATR3s. These are the most recent Hoka Challengers, the ones where they made a little bit wider. And so these so far, I'm really, really enjoying these shoes. They're really working well for me. They're not really very grippy. You would not use them on highly technical, I should say you wouldn't use them on a really muddy, snowy course. You'd be slipping and sliding, but again, it was perfectly dry and smooth. And of course, they've got decent cushion. So they worked very well for me. I just wore shorts. That's all I needed. I didn't need any long pants. I did have compression sleeves for my calves, which add a little bit of warmth down there. Just a short sleeve shirt during the day. And then in the evening, I think I added on some extra layers when I needed to. I had long sleeve shirts and a little running vest in my drop bag so I could kind of put those on when I needed. I did wear an Ultimate Direction vest, the Timothy Olsen version. I don't think people wear this much as I think that Krupika version. And the Krupika version, if I have that right, that's the one that has a place for a bladder. You can put a bladder in it to hold water. This doesn't have that in the back. So this is cooler. It's just got a nothing in the back there. Basically, and so it's cooler on your back, I think. That's why I like it. But it does hold 2 soft-sided water bottles, so I have those. But obviously, if you wanted a lot more water, this wouldn't work. But 4 miles, I wasn't going to have any problem with that. And you could carry bottles in your hands if you needed more. Okay, let's get to the course. Let's get to the race. Loop 1, I did this in 3 hours and 18 minutes, and for 16.7 miles. And when I start going over my next splits, you're going to probably say to yourself, oh, you went out way too fast. I don't think I did. I ran that really, really, really easily. And I was just very fresh at that point. One thing my training probably lacks is I don't do enough long runs. So it's not that I go out too hard in the beginning. It's that I die before I should really die. And I think there's a difference between those two things. So I need to do more longer runs or maybe more longer races in my build up to these things. But I was taken as, I mean, I couldn't have gone any slower. 318. And I took it out really, really easy and just kind of cruised right through that. And it was the other reason I don't feel like it went too fast is because, remember, it started at 4 p.m. So I want to utilize the daylight as much as I can, because in the evening or at night, I'm going to be walking more anyway or slowing down more just because it's dark and you kind of naturally slow down to watch your footing more. So why not use the daylight? You know, go pick it up a little and use the daylight. I wasn't really thinking that way, but it is a reason sometimes I think when people say always, you know, go out really, really slow, I think you need to take the daylight and the nighttime into consideration. You know you're going to slow at night, and that's going to be a rest to some extent. You're going to be resting a little at night because you'll be going slower just because it's nighttime. So I think you can take that into account to some extent. Anyway, I came in, like I said, my wife was at the race. And so when I finished the first loop, I saw my wife and I talked to her for a bit and I sent her off to the hotel. So this is what we do. She does not stay up all night long when I do a 100-mile race. I do not want her staying up all night long. I would rather she gets some sleep because I don't really need her for anything logistically during the night. And also, she's going to drive the next day. I could drive, but I'm going to be falling asleep at the wheel or something, or pulling over if I'm driving. So one of us has to be ready to drive the next day. So I always send her to the hotel and tell her, you know, get as much sleep as you can. And it's not easy for her. She frets and all this type of stuff. Kind of always worried about me. I know that. So it's not great sleep for her, but that's the way we do it. And I would really be unhappy if I was running at 2 a.m. thinking my wife is sitting there at the start finish. I would hate that. Absolutely hate that. Plus it was cold. It was like in the 40s. She would be freezing to death, which means she'd have to go sit in the car and turn the car on. No way. I don't want that. So this is the way we do it. So started loop two. It was, you know, only 7:30, but it is September, so the days are getting a little shorter. So I grabbed my headlight, headed out for loop two, and didn't get that far before the dark came. Probably only ran an hour or so, and it's getting dark. Loop two went fairly well. It wasn't really very eventful. I finished it in 4:11, so you can see that's an hour slower than loop one, 3:18 to 4:11. But again, that was just natural, not a problem. So for two loops, 7 hours and 29 total, it's now 11:30 p.m. roughly. So lap three was completely in the dark, and it went well. I could tell I was getting weaker, of course, but I was feeling okay, and I was still able to run all the easy spots, and I was doing more power hiking, though, that's for sure. And I know at one point I found myself next to a guy and a gal. Coincidentally enough, you're going to hear from the guy coming up, but I found myself near to them, and they could power hike crazily fast. I've never seen anything like how fast they could power hike. So I'd kind of catch up to them, and then I'd try to power hike right behind them. I was just using them to power hike because I was having trouble, and this is on the rocky or rutty ups and downs and stuff like that. So I tried to power hike with them, but they were so fast, I could not keep up for very long. So I'd power hike behind them for a while, then I'd lose them. They would just, you know, take off, even though they're just walking. So then I'd start jogging a little and catch up to them, and then I'd power hike with them for a while and just repeat this over and over. And I might have done this for an hour or two. And I know I saw them over a number of times over a few hours. I would kind of, you know, that just happens in these races. You kind of just accidentally find yourself near people a lot, and these are two that I found myself near fairly often. So lap three took me 4 hours and 48 minutes, a little bit slower, but not too bad. And that meant I did the first 50 miles, the first three loops, in 12 hours and 17 minutes. I think that's pretty good for me. I'm actually pretty happy with that. Not record-breaking, but for me personally, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a good 50-mile time for me, period. And yet, I know I've got another 50 to go, so that's not bad. And remember, I have 30 hours, so it's really nice to finish that first 50 with a cushion, because now I'm thinking, well, I did 50 in 12:17. I've got almost 18 hours to do the next 50, so that's a nice feeling to have. You certainly don't want to take 14 and a half or 15 hours to do the first 50, I'd be screwed if that happened. So I finished lap three. It's 4:17 a.m., right in the middle of the night there. And I should say we're starting to get close to where the sun's going to come up eventually. So what I do remember at the end of lap three is that was kind of the coldest part of the evening, and it really felt cold. And what happens for me, and I think a lot of runners, is you're okay when you're moving, but then when you stop, and it's been like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes, you start to get really, really cold because you're not generating any heat. So I did stop at the start finish, and it wasn't long, and I was starting to shiver. And on top of that, it was humid enough that everything or all my spot was just covered in dew, it was soaked. Everything was completely wet. So I kind of thought about changing my shoes because my feet were really starting to hurt. This is my thing. I get very painful feet. I don't really know why that happens to me because I know it does not happen to everyone. It's just a very generalized foot pain. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I'll just change my shoes. Maybe that'll help. Probably wouldn't. But I couldn't even think of doing it because I thought about changing my socks and shoes. Well, my socks I didn't need to, but I thought about changing the shoes, but it was just so wet. I didn't want to mess with everything, and so I just said the heck with it. I didn't bother doing that. So I wasn't there very long. Like I said, I started to get really cold. So I took off again and started lap four. I do know during some parts of lap three and four, probably that time between about 1 a.m. and 5 a.m., I was doing some what would be pretty close to sleepwalking. I was pretty darn tired at that point. I'm pretty good going all night long, but I have had some times where there are just moments, a little while, my eyes are just kind of closing a little bit. And it doesn't happen so much if I really need to pay attention, because I can't, but maybe I'm on the gravel road or the road, when I know I'm not going to trip, my eyes will just kind of close and I'll veer off to the right or veer off to the left a little bit, not to some great extreme, but I know that was happening for a while. The good thing about lap four, though, is I knew the sun was going to come up eventually. And lap four, I did finish in 4 hours and 53 minutes. So there you notice I was only, lap three was 4:48, lap four, 4:53. So that's not bad. So now I'm starting to kind of level off here, it seems like. And so the total for the first 67 miles or four loops was 17:10. And it's now 9:17 a.m., so when I finished lap four, the sun was up, so that was really, really nice. But I was in a lot of pain. My hip flexors, my feet, they were just very, very, very painful. And this is where the lack of just enough long runs come in, and the fact that I'm just not a super athlete. There's probably not a whole lot I could do that's ever going to make it feel good at this point. To be honest, I'm getting up there in age, and I'm not a super athlete, so 67 miles is always going to be painful for me. And so I was sitting there. The thing, again, though, I had done 67 miles in 17:10. I had 13 hours to do the next 33 miles. I knew I had it made. Unless something really went wrong, I knew I had it made. So when I got back to the start-finish, it was warm enough that I could just sit. So I sat down. I think it was the first time I sat, really, I mean, more than a minute or two. The first time I sat, and I sat there about 15 minutes with my legs up. I was just kind of relaxing, thinking I'm in no hurry. And what was nice is right during that time, my wife came. So that was total coincidence. So that was really nice to see her. So that helped. I didn't think she'd be back already by 9:17, because I told her, sleep in as much as you can, right? But she was already there. And that was really nice. So I headed back out. But when I headed back out, I thought maybe I was going to run the the final 33 miles. I was in a lot of, just the legs, the hips, everything was in a lot of pain. And as much as the feet hurt walking, they hurt even more running. But actually, lap five went pretty well. I actually sped up the first half of lap five. I actually sped up. I did it 2 minutes per mile faster than the last part of lap four. So the last part of lap four was slower than the first part of lap five. Part of that, I think, is because the sun was up and I took that break. So it was actually pretty good for a while. And I did finish lap five in 5:07. So that's only 14 minutes slower than lap four. So lap three, four, and five were roughly about the same amount of time in the 4:50 area, 4:55 hours. So I'm pretty happy with that, how that went. So the total time after five laps, 22 hours and 18 minutes. It was 2:18 p.m. in the afternoon, the kind of nice, warmest part of the day was there. I had 8 hours, almost 8 hours, to do the last 16.7 miles. So again, I knew I had it made. Sat at the start-finish talking to my wife again for another 15 minutes. I mean, there was no rush at all. And I was not out to, at this point, all I wanted to do was finish the darn thing. I was not out to go fast or do anything like that. I didn't care. So I talked to her for a little bit. But I was really in extremely deep pain at this point. I mean, deep, deep pain. A lot of you understand what I mean, but it was just, you know, it's not so much bonking. It's just the bones and ligaments and all that just are just beat up so bad, so deep. I know I headed out and I was just like wobbling heading out. I think there's a picture. My wife has a picture of me walking out and I'm just like stumbling basically. And I told myself I was just going to walk the whole 17 miles. So I told her, just take your time, go somewhere, do something if you want, because it's going to be a long time since you see me. And so the first half of that, only 8.3 miles, the first half of the last loop, took me 2 hours and 57 minutes. So basically 3 hours to go 8 miles. That's pretty pathetic, but I was just enjoying it. I mean, I was okay. I wasn't, you know, crying or upset about it. I was like, hey, this is fine. I got almost 8 hours, so what if I take 3 hours and do half of it? Then I sat at Richie's Haven, that far point, and I sat there for about 15 minutes, and the one reason I sat there is my friend Brian, I had felt he was behind me the whole way. For one, he never passed me, and for two, when I got to Richie's Haven, his drop bag was still there. And the very last lap, you were supposed to take your drop bag and put it over to the other side so they knew you went through it so they could take it back to the start-finish. Well, his drop bag was still there, so that meant he was behind me. So I thought, I'm going to sit here and wait for Brian, because if he's going this slow now, he's, you know, maybe we can do the last part together. Or at least I can say hi and whatever. Well, what I didn't know was Brian had dropped. He did five laps, and I think his hip or something just gave out. And he dropped, which really bums me out, but I didn't know that. So I sat there for about 15 minutes, and I said, what the heck, I guess I'll get going. And this is when something really, really, really weird happened. So I start walking, and actually I was running a little bit of lap six. I say I walked all of it, but I was doing a little baby jogs here and there. But what happened, something happened strange to my heels, the heels of my feet, both feet did the exact same thing. And I can't even explain this. It wasn't really an Achilles pull, because I've pulled my Achilles. I've strained those. I've strained my calves. And it probably was the Achilles, but it was a very bottomous part of the Achilles, right at the, almost underneath the foot, not quite, still the back of the foot, but right where, if you kind of feel the back of your foot, you kind of where the bone is most prominent back there, even a little below that. So I don't know if it's where the Achilles tendon or whatever feeds into the bone. I haven't looked that closely, but it was an astounding pain. And it was kind of I can't even describe it. It's kind of electrical-ish metal, like a piece of metal, cold piece of metal, electrical pain, you know, it was bizarre. Like, I can't describe it. It was both feet. And the upshot was I could not I could not plant my heel onto the ground because that would stretch it too much. I just could not stretch that the bottom of that heel at all. So when walking, I don't know how to describe this so you can understand how bizarre this was. I did the last 8.3 miles on my toes. Now, as I say that, you might say, wow, that sounds like a bummer. No, it wasn't a bummer. It was freaking horrible. 8.3 miles walking on your, and I don't just mean 4 foot walking. I mean never, ever, ever letting my toes, my heels touch the ground. Because if they did, this sharp pain would shoot through. So I'm walking on my toes, and of course that creates all types of problems itself. The front of the feet are hurting more, and you're using like your kind of your knees more and everything. Your calf, not my calves, I guess. I'm taking it off my calves. It was horrible. Freaking horrible. And the last part of it also has the sharpest uphills. And of course that was really bad because that stretches your calves even more and your Achilles even more. So I'd have to really get up on my tippy toes to go up a hill. Anyway, I just can't explain how bizarre this was. I've never had this happen. Actually, though, amazingly, I did that part in 3 hours and 7 minutes, only a little bit slower than I did the first part of lap six. I did the first half of lap six in 2:57 and the second lap in 3:07. I'm not sure how I even did it that fast. The total lap, though, was 6 hours and 5 minutes, which is an hour slower than the one before. So it's very slow lap. I mean, 16.7 miles in 6 hours. That's pretty pathetic, folks. But again, I knew I had time. On top of this painful, bizarre walking on my toes, one of the other races, the evening Saturday races, were going on, and they were closer to they were shorter races, so they were closer to the start-finish, and those people were all flying by me, so I had no energy and all this pain, and I have to keep jumping off to the side of the trail to let them by. It's kind of crazy. By the way, I never did see a naked person, although I read someone else's blog, a lady, and she said she got to see a naked guy run by, but I, for better or worse, I saw no naked people. Anyway, I did make it to the finish. Yay! And I got the medal I spoke about and the hat that I'm wearing. My final time was 28:23:38, so 28 hours, 23 minutes, 8:23 p.m. It was dark again by then, and it was cold. Again, probably, maybe only 40s, but then I stopped moving, and I just started shivering like crazy. And this is when I'm so happy my wife is there, because she took care of me. She took all the stuff and put it in the car, loaded everything up. They had like some free pasta for the runner, so I took a little bowl of that or something. But I probably wasn't there for more than 20, 30 minutes afterwards, and mainly even that long because I just couldn't move. I was in so much pain. The band was playing. I mean, it was really, really cool. But I was just so cold. I couldn't really enjoy it as much as I'd like. I mean, I was so cold and so tired and so worn out. I was just like, let's get in the car. Let's get out of here. So that's what we did. And so back to the heel problem. I have two kind of things that might have contributed. One might be that power hiking I did behind those two people, that couple. And I practice hiking, but I'm not a great hiker, but nevertheless, I practice it, but I have never hiked that fast. And I think if you think about hiking, you actually heel plant more than when you're running. So I think maybe by hiking so fast for a couple of hours, maybe that caused the strain there, which means I need to practice hiking even more. And I need to make sure I'm doing it really, really fast when I'm practicing. And the other thing is maybe sitting with my legs up, because you kind of put your heels on. And maybe it's not so much that I had my heels up on something, but maybe that caused my body to kind of go into you're done mode. And just like all the heel area maybe just started contracting, like, okay, we're done. We're not going to do any more stretching. And then I went out and tried to stretch on it. I tried to go out and walk and run on it. So maybe those two things. Maybe I should not have sat either so long or sat with my heels up like that. Maybe that was a problem. But anyway, it was bad. And I should say, it stayed bad for a good month. It was seriously, seriously a problem. I could not run at all, really, for about a month, even longer than that. I felt something residual for probably close to 2 months afterwards. It was really something. Anyway, to add a little bit of spice to this, and when I go to races, I take my recorder and I really want to record people and get some alternate views to what happened. I was so beat. I wasn't about to do that. My friend Brian was gone, so I wasn't going to – he's a guy I kind of wanted to interview. And there were all types of people I could have interviewed, but I was like, I can't even hold on to the recorder. I could barely speak. I lose my voice in long races. It gets all raspy just from all the breathing, and I'm like, forget this. But a couple months later, I did interview a friend of mine, Dan Semsel, and guess what? Dan is the guy I was power hiking behind. So Dan lives up in near Dayton, Ohio, not too far from me. We're really only just Facebook friends. You know, I've kind of become Facebook friends with a lot of the ultra runners in the area. Dan seemed like a cool guy. Obviously, he did the race and finished it. He finished a couple hours ahead of me, 26:46. Great job, Dan. And I just wanted an alternate take on the race. So let's listen to Dan. Okay, I'm here with Dan. And my first question is, you live in Fairborn, Ohio, is that correct?
That's correct. I've lived in Fairborn for about 5 years now.
And where were you? Are you originally from this area?
No, I grew up in Athens, Ohio, but I'm retired Air Force, and my last assignment was Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Oh, very nice. So when were you at Wright-Patterson?
I was still on active duty from June of 2011 through May of 2013.
Still on active duty. When were you first on active duty?
I entered the Air Force in 1988.
1988. So were you always in the States during all this time?
No, I served several tours overseas, primarily in the Middle East.
Oh, really? Oh, that must have a number of stories right there, I imagine.
Training in Afghanistan in the summertime is not the easiest thing in the world.
Wow. Well, that could be a whole conversation right there. But we're here to talk about the Hallucination 100, which we both did. First question is, have you run any of the run Woodstock races before?
I did Hallucination in 2016 as well as 2017. So this is my second time doing the Hallucination 100.
Okay, so how were the – because I thought the conditions were beyond ideal. It was dry. The temperatures were perfect. How was it in 2016?
2016, it was a swamp. The first lap was good, but the laps after that, the skies opened up and turned all that nice hard-packed sand into a very, very soft mud. My time from 2017 was 3 hours faster than my 2016 time because of the course conditions.
Yeah, I felt like when I was running that I had no excuse not to finish on time because everything was just so ideal that day. So I can imagine being faster in 2017. Basically, the course was six loops. Feel free to just give kind of an overview of how the race went. You can go loop by loop if you want, or how your day went in general. Were you feeling good the whole way, bad points, or anything like that?
I had the opportunity to pace a friend of mine who was trying to get her Western States qualifier done. So I ran with her for the first four laps. The idea was that I would pace her for four laps, then her pace crew would take over, her official pacers would take over. And I was originally going to peel off after four laps, but the conditions were fantastic. The first lap, we stayed right on target. Our goal was to get in. We wanted to see how far we can make it before sunset with a stretch goal of making it back to the first of the aid stations before the sun went down. Reality, I wanted to get back to the gravel road before sunset. But we did get past the aid station, which really surprised me. Our goal was to finish the first 50 miles in 12 hours, and we hit that right on the mark. And then it was all about waiting for the sun to come up. Lap two was sporty at night. Once we lost the sun, we backed our pace way off and focused more on running the runnable portions on the roads and walking the trails. And we did that for lap three as well. Lap four, as soon as the sun came up, my partner took off. And actually went out a little bit quick, but she left me behind. I stayed at a steady pace and came in on target for lap four and felt good enough to go back out for five and six once I found out that she had been picked up by her official pacers. So went out and did lap five and was actually starting to pull negative splits. So second fastest lap of the day was my sixth lap. The only lap faster was the first lap. But the conditions were ideal. The single track was very, very clear and dry. The hills, there really are no hills on that course. It's the easiest 100 of the four courses that I've run. It's the easiest of the courses I've run. And it was tailor-made for somebody to attempt their first 100-miler.
What do you do for nutrition? Do you have your own stuff? Just eat what they have?
I'm a no-meat athlete, so I primarily use my own foods. I do sandwiches with organic jams. Usually I like strawberry jam on wheat bread with I'll try and find a high-grain, high-protein wheat bread of some sort. And then I'll add in peanut butter, whether it's a – I found a really nice blend of coconut peanut butter that just sits well with my stomach on a long race, and my target is to eat a full sandwich every lap on a six-lap race. And I stayed with that. Beyond that, you know, the miracle of honey stingers. Yeah. Every 5 miles, I put down a honey stinger.
What about do you just drink pure water, or did you have a sport drink?
I usually stick with water, and usually in the back half, the last 50 miles, I'll start mixing in a little bit of sports drink of some kind just to keep my electrolytes up. Right. On a cool day like that, I don't have to worry about Endurolytes or S-caps or anything like that because I'm getting the electrolytes I need from the honey stingers pretty much.
Very good. What shoes? Did you wear the same pair of shoes the whole way, and what were they?
I swapped out twice. I started out with some Innovates and switched over to, I switched over to the Altras and finished with the Hokas. I like to vary the shoes through the race because it helps keep my feet in decent shape for the whole thing.
That's a good idea. It's probably what I need to do. When you're running and things start to hurt, which inevitably they will, I'm always curious, what starts hurting on you? Is it your feet, your knees, your hips, a little bit of everything, or do you have certain body parts that start to go bad?
It's my shoulders.
Oh, interesting.
It's I've had two shoulder surgeries, and I'm recovering from more recent shoulder injuries. And it was I know my shoulders are going to be the first thing to hurt, and my goal is to not land on them if I fall.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So your legs generally stay fairly good?
Yeah, they stay pretty good unless I roll an ankle like I did at Rough Trail 50K this past weekend.
Oh.
I usually don't have too much issue with joint pain. Blisters, I learned my first 100 to take care of my feet and try and avoid blisters as long as possible. And I came away from a hallucination in really good shape foot-wise.
That's fantastic. What do you think of the whole kind of hippie vibe of Run Woodstock?
I love it. It's such an amazing experience to see folks out there from 5K to 100 miles over the course of effectively a three-day weekend. I highly recommend it to anybody that wants to run. They put on a fantastic event.
Yeah, and they got the music playing, bands actually playing when you come in, and yeah. It is pretty darn fun, I agree.
It's the most entertaining race series that I've ever done.
Yeah. You have run at least 200s. Have you run any other 100s?
Yeah, this was my sixth 100-miler, my fourth successful one. I have, in late June, I completed, I guess it was July, I completed the Burning River 100, and got my Western States ticket there, so hallucination, that's why I was willing to leave after the fourth lap if I wasn't feeling it. But I've done hallucination twice successfully. I've done Burning River once successfully out of two attempts. And I've done the Indiana Trail 100 successfully, and I took a DNF at the Mohican 100 on the third lap, at the end of the third lap.
So when you have DNF'd, what is it that's went wrong? You just lose all your energy, or?
Well, with Burning River, the first time, it was my first 100, I bit off more than I could chew. I didn't take care of my feet, and I was paying the price. By the time I got to about mile 67, I couldn't put my weight on my feet, and I decided to peel out. The DNF at Mohican, the heat got me. I got into the third lap, and I couldn't keep anything in my stomach, no liquids, no foods. And so when I came done at the end of the third lap, my teammates saw me staggering, and that was jumping out was the right place at that time. It would have been unsafe for me to go back out, even though I still had 8 hours to finish the last lap. It would have been unsafe. I would have been putting people at risk.
So I saw you're in the lottery for Western. How many tickets do you have?
I've got 4 tickets this year.
Ah, so 4 times as many as I have. So that'll give you probably like a 4% chance or something.
There last year.
Last year was 2.5% per ticket, I think.
Yeah, last year for 4 tickets was 9.5%, but this year there's almost 5,000 applicants, so I'm guessing it's going to be about 8% for 4 tickets this year.
What other ultras? Just if you had some other ultras that you've really enjoyed that you might recommend to people of any distance.
Yeah, I've primarily run the ORRC races locally. The Doggone Long 50-miler, the Another Damn 50K, Tie-Dye 50K. I like them because they fit very well for training for the summer hundreds. And
yeah.
They're local, they're fun, and they're inexpensive. Beyond that, I did the Kanawha Trace 50K as my first ever ultra in West Virginia and thought that was beautiful. But my goal is Western States, and once I get past that, I'd love to do the Comrades Ultra Marathon in South Africa. That's pretty much it on the Ultra Series for me.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list as well someday. So you did this, what was the race you did this last weekend in Kentucky?
I did the Rough Trail 50K. In down in Slade, Kentucky, in the Red River Gorge, and it was by far the toughest and most beautiful race I've ever run. It makes Mohican look easy.
Was that the first year of the race?
It was the, I want to say, second or third year they've run that one. It's very well organized, but the vertical is just phenomenal. I went into it, and I was humbled by the course. There was 5,200 feet of climbing in the first 28 miles.
Wow!
So it was sobering. I got to mile 18 with 5 hours to go before the cutoff and thought it was in the bag. And then I saw the hills we were doing, and trying to keep a 25-minute mile was a challenge. It's the course didn't break me, but it definitely taught me some humility.
Yeah, that's good. I'm a little new to the area, but is it, maybe you'll know better than I will, is it me or has Kentucky just exploded with ultras in the last 2 or 3 years?
Honestly,
does it just seem that way to me?
I couldn't really say. I know that the company down there that did the Rough Trail 50K has a Warhammer 100, Next Opportunity events. They're adding a bunch of races, taking advantage of the beautiful trails around Red River Gorge, and I can't say as I blame them. It's beautiful, challenging, and I think if I hadn't spent so much time taking pictures, I would have made the cutoff.
Yeah, and if I'm correct, that's kind of all part of this big Daniel Boone National area, which goes all the way down to southern Kentucky. So I did the Yama Crawl, which was like a first or second year race, which is way down to southern Kentucky, which is just kind of the other, all the way down at the bottom, and that was beautiful as well. And I think that might be a different company. So I think these two companies are just putting on a slew of new ultras in Kentucky, so people probably need to start going there because it really is beautiful.
I want to recommend it to everybody, but it's definitely not one. The Rough Trail 50K is not one for a beginner.
Yeah.
It's there were a lot of first timers out there, and there's a lot of people I saw on the course that I respect for their abilities and the times that I saw. I mean, the winner just barely broke 5 hours.
Wow!
And he passed me on his back leg on the first loop. The course is a series of loops. He passed me on a pace that I thought he'd be in under 4.
Wow.
That's how brutal the last 13 miles of that course is.
Yeah. All right. Well, the last thing is, I noticed you're doing some coaching. So you're coaching groups that are training for, or a group that who train for local marathons?
Yes, I coach the Four Seasons training team. It's primarily a bunch of runners that are the folks that are trying to get in shape. Some of them are trying to push their boundaries a little bit. So we focus on the Air Force Marathon in the fall and the Flying Pig Marathon in the spring. And it's very rewarding to see a lot of folks achieve goals that they never thought they'd reach. We had this year 5 first-time marathoners.
Very nice.
We had a couple of first-time half marathoners. We've taken people all the way through their first 50-miler, and it's just very, very gratifying to see people achieve their goals.
So part of that is coming out to the track and doing a little speed work every week. You enjoy the speed work?
I was a sprinter in high school and was recruited for speed events in college, and I love doing speed work. But we do speed work and hill work on Wednesday nights and long runs on Saturday.
Very nice. All right, well, keep up the good work, and thanks a lot for talking to me, man.
Hey, thanks very much.
Okay, there you go. Talked about Dan's coaching. I actually went up to where he was, up to the track where he was coaching some of his clients who were doing some speed work. So he's a very cool guy, and I think he just ran the Honolulu Marathon, by the way, here recently. So anyway, thank you very much, Dan, for the interview. Very much enjoyed that. And he, too, gives Run Woodstock a big thumbs up. He also mentioned the ORRC. That's the ORRRC. That's the Ohio River Road Runners Club. And that's a local club that spans, maybe it's based in Dayton, I don't know. So where I live is in between Dayton and Cincinnati. It's kind of basically a big corridor of these two cities and cities all in between them. And this is an incredible club. I don't know what I pay, $15 a year or something. And they put on a ton of races. And even though it's the Road Runners Club, I feel like they put on more trail races than they do road races. And they put on races from the race I did. I just did a 5K a couple days ago, and it was one of theirs. So they put on little road 5Ks up to a road marathon. They've got trail races anywhere from 5K to 10K up to 50K and probably longer. I think 50 miles. I'm sure they have 50 miles. I don't think they have a 100-miler yet. But they put on a ton of races, and if you're a member, they are sometimes free. Or if you have to pay, you might pay like $7. Maybe the marathon's the only one you have to pay a little more for, but most of them are really, really, really cheap. So I am extremely lucky to be in this area, and I really need to jump in and start helping out more because it's pretty much all volunteer-driven. The race directors for most of them are just members of the club who volunteer, and thank you to all of you wonderful people. And I need to jump in and start helping out more. I have volunteered at a couple of races at aid stations, but I need to start chipping in a little bit more for the club. So great organization. So to finish off Run Woodstock and the Hallucination 100, I was 75th of 92 finishers. Not too impressive, right? I was 4th of 6 of the male 55 to 59. I was 63rd of 74 males. So as you can see, I was on the back end of things, in large part due to that last loop where I really kind of fell apart, I would imagine. I will say this, though. 52 people did not finish. So 92 finished and 52 didn't. Seems like a large number of drops, and I'm not sure why, because it was perfect conditions. And part of me wonders if that could have played into it. Is it possible? It was so nice that people ran the first 50 miles too hard. I'm totally guessing, wildly guessing, but I don't know really why there'd be so few, so many drops on an ideal day like this. Also, only 18 women finished the 100 miler. I would like to see more women. Come on, ladies, get out there and run these races. I will mention the male and the overall winner was Tobias Crum in 18 hours, 30 minutes, and 53 seconds. And the first female was Jessica Southers in 20 hours and 5 seconds. Ouch! 20 hours flat plus 5 seconds. That had to hurt. I wonder if she's ever beaten 20 hours. If so, she's probably banging her head against the wall now. I wonder if she, you know, was she looking at her watch at some point saying, oh, I can beat 20 hours and sprinting at the end? Or was she not really paying attention? Or I would be interesting to talk to her. Maybe I should go find her. Maybe I'll have to stalk her on Ultra Sign Up or something. But anyway, I kind of want to go back to Run Woodstock because I had one problem in doing the 100 miler, and especially if you're like me, I kind of missed a lot of the vibe in a sense because I was running the whole darn thing. And because I'm slow enough that I finished and it was already past 8 p.m. on Saturday and it was kind of cold and I was dead, I didn't even take the time to soak in that finish there. Okay. There were things that the band was going to play for quite a bit longer and, you know, the festivities were going to keep going. And I just didn't have the energy to enjoy it. So it'd be nice to go back and maybe do either a shorter race or to volunteer or do or pay someone or something like that, and then hang out and watch the bands and enjoy stuff like that. So I think that's what I'd like to do someday. Will I do it? I don't know. Okay, well, that is the end of the main segment of this podcast. Let's see, what time are we? We're exactly 1 hour. I'm going to add one little part. Sometimes I add a general education segment, and this segment theoretically has nothing whatsoever to do with endurance sports. Zero. However, this is an exception. This one kind of does. And this is something I came across that was kind of interesting. And the question is, for those of you who've seen mice running in little wheels in cages, the question is, do they like doing that? We've all seen this, mice and rats and gerbils. They're running around their little wheel in cage. Do they like doing that? Or are they doing it because they're bored out of their minds because they're stuck in a cage? Or what? So researchers decided to study this. So I think this was back in 2009. Researchers decided to study it. And researchers already knew that these little mice are exercise maniacs. In fact, a mouse can log more than 5 kilometers per night on a running wheel. 5 kilometers. Think of that little tiny mouse. 5 kilometers in one evening? That's insane. So they're trying to figure out, do they enjoy this, or what was this some, like, you know, they're captive and mentally they've gone bad, and that's like some obsessive thing they just did. So what was the obvious thing to do? Put a wheel in their backyard. And that's basically what they did. So in 2009, neurophysiologist Joanna Meyer set up an unusual experiment in her backyard. In a corner of her garden, she and her colleagues at Leiden University in the Netherlands placed a little rodent running wheel inside a cage, an open cage, and trained a motion-detecting infrared camera on the scene. So they got in the backyard, they just put a wheel out there and put a camera on it. They put out some food there just to get the mice in the area and saw what happened. Well, wild house mice discovered the food and scampered right onto the wheel and started to run. Rats, shrews, and even frogs ran on the wheel, and I believe I even heard a snail as well. More than 200,000 animals in 3 years. I'm amazed I could count that. 200,000 animals in 3 years ran on this thing. Even without, and eventually they took the food away, they still came and ran on it. Sometimes the rodents were so eager to run that they couldn't wait to take turns. At one point, a large mouse sent a smaller mouse flying when it climbed on the wheel and started running in the opposite direction. So a conclusion, I'm not sure this was her conclusion, this was the article I was reading, but a conclusion is, one thing was clear, the mice seemed to enjoy it, or the rodents seemed to enjoy it. They seemed to find exercise in and of itself rewarding. That was the conclusion. I'm going to add my own thing here, in that I'm still not positive that's proven. Well, they did prove that mice will run on a wheel a bunch, even if they don't have to. One thing that they didn't say in this, though, was this 200,000 different rodents? Or did some of them come back a lot? I don't know. Because I would argue it may not be that they enjoyed it, but maybe they were curious, for one, about what's going on. That's not exactly the same thing as enjoyment. And number two, maybe they thought the wheel would get them somewhere. So maybe they were running on it thinking that they would find more food or something. I mean, who can read the mind of a mouse? So maybe there was another reason they were running. I mean, all you can really say at this point is, yes, they will run on that thing. Even though they could go out and run in the grass, all they wanted, they jumped into the wheel and ran onto the wheel. So it does seem like they just like to run. But if they just like to run, then why don't they just run on the grass? So at the very least, I'm not sure it says they enjoy exercising. They enjoy running on the wheel, it seems. Maybe. Again, so I'm not quite so sure that this means they love exercising. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. But anyway, it was interesting. And one reason they're doing this is try to transfer this knowledge to humans, because I guess they did discover some type of mice didn't do it so much. So maybe they can compare mice that don't like to run as well as mice that do like to run. and think about humans, you know, people. Some people like to exercise, some people don't like to exercise. Can they find out the difference in these things? Blah, blah, blah. All right. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. So that is it for today. I'm all done. Hey, everybody. I'm jumping into my own podcast here because I wanted to add a couple of things and fix a couple of mistakes I made in the podcast. Number one, I didn't mention anything about the aid stations. The aid stations didn't have anything really to go crazy about. I can't even remember what the drink was. I think it was just Gatorade. I know it's pretty sad that I don't remember, but I think it was just Gatorade products. And then they had, you know, Coke and Sprite, I guess, and 7-Up. I know they had Coke because I'm a big Coke drinker in races. And besides that, I think, you know, your real basic stuff, peanut butter and jelly and so forth and so on. They did have hot foods at some point, I'm pretty sure. I don't usually use those, you know, when they have soups or quesadillas or something like that. I don't really get into those very much. I like them. I just don't eat them during ultras, I guess. I don't know why. I just don't. Sometimes I'll have some soup. The other thing I left out was I forgot to tell you two of the things I got at the finish line. Yes, of course, I got a 100-mile buckle. Completely forgot about that because we got a medal. So normally, do you usually get a medal and a buckle? I don't know, but we did. We got a medal, which was really cool. It's got a peace sign on it. I mentioned that, but yes, of course, we got a really cool hippie-looking buckle for doing 100 miles. And we also got a pint glass. I forgot about that. So we got that at the finish line. And the last thing is, I made a complete mistake in what shoes I wore. I did not wear the Challenger ATR3s. I wore the Hoka Speed Goats. And these are the newest version of the Hoka Speed Goats. And I had the original version. I could not really wear those because they were too narrow. So, you know, a lot of people know Hoka was just making their shoes way too narrow. And I finally listened and have made them wider. They're still not really wide enough for me. But the Hoka Speed Goats, if I go like a full size bigger than normal, they're big enough. And I really do like the Speed Goats. And even though I'm wearing this oversized pair, they're not causing a problem. I'm not like tripping on them because of that. And so the new Speed Goats, they are pretty sweet. I am enjoying them. I really didn't need any of that traction in this race. I could have worn my ATR Challenger 3s. So I didn't really need the traction that the Speed Goats provided, but in any case, they're just good on trail. So I do like the new Speed Goat, And the reason I had said Challenger ATR3s is in my race afterwards, after a hallucination, I did wear the Challenger ATR3s. And that'll be my next podcast. So that's when I did wear them. So I am into the Hoka Speed Goats, the Hoka Challenger ATR3s. I like those two shoes. Another shoe I really like is, believe it or not, Skechers Go Trail. I think it's a Skechers Go Trail Ultra, maybe. It's a really, 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 really good shoe, and I think it's really underrated. Those are probably my three favorite shoes right now. But anyway, this is not a shoe show. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, back to the finish of the show. All right. So, again, you can find more information about me at my website at runsmith.net. All that stuff, social media information. Also, on runsmith.net, my coaching services. Please check that out. Yes, I'm a coach. And also, if you'd like to donate, you can go to patreon.com/runsmith, R-U-N-S-M-I-T-H, patreon.com/runsmith. Please donate. Also, could you please leave a review on iTunes? Please, 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 please. And I don't always check it, so if you do, maybe send me an email afterwards and said, I left a review, so I could double check that. But please go to iTunes, click on it, leave a review. That would be absolutely wonderful. And again, go check out Run Woodstock. Very fun race. I heartily approve. Oh, there was one other thing I got. I forgot to mention. They gave me a poster. So I'm showing a poster to the camera. And if you're wondering why I say camera, because you're listening to the podcast, this whole podcast, I take a video of it and I put it on YouTube. There's no difference except that you see me and you see some of the stuff I'm talking about. But all the things I'm talking about, I make pictures of as well. And I put it on runsmith.net. Anyway, that's it. This is Run Smith Enterprises presenting topics in endurance sports. signing out. Have a fun workout. Oh, are you still here? Well, then you will get the bonus. Actually, it's kind of an anti-bonus because you're going to hear me sing, and I cannot sing. However, I did pen this little song, so I will sing it for you, and this is called O Holy Trail. O Holy Trail, my lamp is slowly fading. It is the night, and I'm weary and dazed. Long are the miles of rocks and roots and pine trees till dawn appears and my soul is revealed. But a thrill of hope, my weary bones rejoicing, for yonder breaks a new and glorious scene. I fall to my knees, a finish line before me, a medal is mine. Cheers and friends, and hugs and smiles. Oh, pizza and wine, until we run again next time.